You better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining our door.
Come over here, kid. What is up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic.
It's
and you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. And you got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the One Country's Most Delicious Hour. It is Michelle Anna Jordan, me in the flesh. If you pinch me, I'll scream. I think I took, oh gosh, what was it, Mike, 5 weeks off? I think it was about that.
Yeah, it was about that. I think you were here one out of six.
Okay, yeah.
Something like that.
Lots of things I had to tend to. So I am back and with a two-headed show, we could say, tonight. We have two topics tonight, as we often do in Mouthful, though not as often as we used to. We have my Facebook friend, Nicholas Petty of Mendo Bistro, drove all the way down from... Do you actually live in Fort Bragg?
I do live in Fort Bragg.
Great. Okay, well, thank you for driving all the way down here. And we also have Gretchen Giles of Made Local Magazine. And joining us in just a few minutes of Go Local Sonoma is Terry Garrett. So we're going to start with Mendo Bistro, and so that we've got get Terry in the room when we
sure
start
thing.
Talking about Go Local. But I know you also have Go Local Mendocino.
Right, and you know, I think it's less of a doubleheader than we might expect. Mm-hmm. We opened in 1999, so coming up on 15 years, mm-hmm. and we've always supported local producers, organic producers, et cetera, all of the things mm-hmm. that we've all done for so many years, but that are now mainstream.
Bless you.
I remember going actually to a Chef's Collaborative conference, probably a dozen years ago, maybe longer, and the topic was, how do we get the attention of the mainstream media? How can we convince them that local and organic food is not only viable, but really the thing to do? And at the time, it almost seemed like it was an unsurmountable challenge. You know, they might run one piece every 8 months in the back page of, you know, Food and Wine or something like that. But now, I mean, you cannot open a paper.
It's
everywhere,
yeah.
As well as the greenwashing that goes all along with it. So
yeah.
I think we'll complement each other very well.
Yeah, and then throw me in. When I started writing in 86, that was the first thing. I just started writing locally because interested me.
Right.
And there was nobody doing it at the time.
Exactly. And it's easy for us, I think, because we are in such a bountiful area. You know, it's nice to see this concept spreading nationally, internationally, and that people are really recognizing that what they have in their backyard is not only delicious and valuable and valid, but is also disappearing. Unless we start doing something about that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And, you know, I think we've noticed that on the coast longer. And so it's sort of moving, I think, from both sides of the coast mm-hmm. towards the center, especially as far as the big metropolises go. I mean, you talk to people who grow up on farms in Iowa, and they're like, yeah, the corn out of the field.
Right.
So they love that. But no, that's a huge topic. Let's go back to Mendocino. Tell us about Mendo Bistro first.
So, like I said, we opened up in 1999, and at the time, Fort Bragg was very much a blue-collar town. The Georgia-Pacific Mill was running full force, or actually not full force, but it was still a major employer. And what I had in mind was a place where maybe a young person who had grown up in Fort Bragg had gone someplace else to college, let's say, discovered a whole world of food that they maybe hadn't had at home, Thai, Indian, Vietnamese, you know, all sorts of the different regions of Italy, et cetera, and came home for a visit, wanted to take their partner out and maybe their mom and dad, maybe the grandparents as well. And I wanted a place where everyone would feel comfortable so that, you know, if grandpa, all he wanted was meat and potatoes, by God, that's what he could get. you know, maybe mom wanted something lighter, a soup and salad, et cetera. But the kid who came home didn't want to feel like he or she had necessarily come completely back to the sticks and still had some level of culinary sophistication. And so we've designed the menu in a way that makes that possible. There's what we call the choice menu, which you can choose a protein. And we did this before Kraft and Tom Colicchio was doing his thing. You choose a protein, how you'd like it cooked, what sauce you would like. And so you get to design your own dishes. And actually, one of the – I also teach at Mendocino College, and one of my colleagues there who teaches statistics uses the choice menu in her statistics class to show how many different combinations you can make with the ingredients and preparations and sauces. So you know, and I did that for two reasons. One, just to give people control over their food, because everybody – wants control over their food. I mean, you've worked in kitchens, you've been restaurant critic, you know what that's all about. You also know probably that historically there's been tension between waiters and cooks. You know, as a cook, you get into a rhythm, you cook your chicken, and it's you get your pan hot, it's down, you throw in the shallots, you grab some pancetta, you know, whatever your particular preparation is. The waiter comes and says, oh, well, table 31, they want this with, you know, the different sauce, and they don't want the starch. And they're not doing it to make your life miserable. They're doing that to
but that's
make somebody
a byproduct.
And, but that's how it feels, because you're in this flow. And I kind of wanted to disrupt that. And so with the choice menu, which is about, say, 30% or so of our sales, every order is a special order. So every ticket you really have to look at and really pay attention and engage in a different way. And I think that it has eliminated a lot of that historical tension, let's say.
Yeah,
and
that's interesting.
And has made the kitchen really realize, like, hey, all we're doing is trying to make people happy. So that's that portion of it. We also make all our own pastas. So there's a big section of pastas in the menu. And then on the other side are the entrees, which is where we get to have fun. So somebody who wants something that's a little more adventurous or a little more on the edge, they can go from the right side of the menu. The people who want something that is still delicious but more in their comfort zone, they can go for the choice menu. And then in the last year, we've also opened a bar downstairs, which is called Bar Below. And we've started doing lunch and brunch there for the past 3 weeks. So, and I brought you some of our food that
you got some goodies sitting here in front of us. Cool,
yeah,
cool. And it's in Fort where in Fort Bragg?
We are on Main Street at the corner of Redwood Avenue, upstairs in a large building called the Company Store. So,
what is the Company Store?
So the Company Store was built in 1909. Fort Bragg was a very booming town on the heels of the San Francisco earthquake, because that's where a lot of the wood to rebuild San Francisco came from. And there were a lot of wildcat lumber companies popping up at that time. And this company, the Union Lumber Company, wanted to make a statement in the way that people used to associate with the banks, where they would build with marble and gilded cages. And they wanted to say, hey, we're here. We're not going anywhere. You're going to get paid. So they built this really grand, impressive building. It was actually designed by the same architects who did the Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco. So it is this immense building that was literally the Company store. Just like the old, you know, work 16 tons. I mean, what do you get? So loggers would get everything from their work gear to their skillets, clothing, and food.
I know I've been there.
Right.
I can almost picture it. It's just a little fuzzy.
Yeah. For most of its life, it was a department store of one form or another.
Yeah.
Seafair, and then it was a part of a regional mini chain called Daly's.
Uh-huh.
And when the patriarch died, the kids didn't want to keep it going. Mm-hmm. So now it's mostly services. There's Mendocino Cookie Companies in there. There's Bamboo Garden Spa. There's a yoga studio. Living Light Raw Food Culinary Institute is there as well.
Wow, so. All that in Fort Bragg.
Exactly. Who knew?
Who
15
knew?
Years ago
yeah,
when we opened
really?
Up. And when we opened up, people said, are you kidding? This place is never going to survive. So,
and here you are. And you have in part made a name for yourself with your crab cakes.
Correct.
So you have to tell us about the crab cakes.
Well, so the crab cakes are, you know, the blessing and the curse of my life because that's it seems
take them off the menu. Can you?
Well, yes, I can because I'm not going to serve crab when it's not in season.
Good for you.
And, you know, I'm not going to use frozen crab, although I have to say crab is a seafood that does actually successfully freeze a lot better than others, but still, it's just not as good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, literally, in the summer, we get at least two tables or more a night who will get up and walk out because we don't have crab cakes. And, you know, it's true, folks. I can't cook anything else. That is the only thing I can make that is delicious. Wrong. So, it's been great because it's certainly put us on the map. And it's certainly given us a lot of mileage, let's say.
Now, was it the competition that put you on the map?
It is.
I think it was the first year.
Correct.
I was a judge that
right.
first year.
Mm-hmm.
It was memorable for several reasons.
Yes, it was.
And you won that year, and you've won...
I've won a number
several,
of times.
Several times.
They promoted me to judge, and then I was out of it for a few years. And then, again, last year, I got let back in, and we won again. And like I said, it's been a great thing, but it's also been, you know, a kind of a pigeonholing.
Sure.
As I'm sure you know, as an author, as a food person, people latch on to
one
kind
thing.
Of the one thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm very grateful that we've had that kind of in our arsenal, so to speak. But I wish people would know that everything else is delicious as well.
Yeah, there you go. Forget what I was going to say.
I know.
Crab cakes.
Right.
Tell us about them. You don't have to give, you know, proportions. You don't have to give out the recipe.
There are no secrets in cooking. You know
okay.
that.
Yeah.
I mean, so what makes them singular is that they're mostly crab. They're just enough other stuff
to kind of
hold together.
Okay. There you go.
And you know, the recipe's on the website. Mm-hmm. It was actually in Sunset not that long ago as one of their top 25 test kitchen recipes
cool.
of all time. And I'd say, like, probably a third of the orders that go out, they're kind of crumbly because they're not
because you don't have too many binders. Exactly.
Exactly. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you serve them with a sauce?
They're served with tarragon aioli and then a very simple cabbage slaw. And one of my sous chefs, the slaw used to bug the crap out of him because all it is finely shredded cabbage that we soak in cold water with some salt. And so the salt basically breaks down the cell a little bit and allows for more flavor transfer. Then we just toss that with a little bit of champagne vinegar and some chives and nothing else. And we would get people that the restaurant has an open counter so people can come and approach the cooks and engage us in conversation. And people would come up all the time and talk about the awesome dressing that was on this drove this kid insane because a lot of times, particularly young cooks, they get this idea that things have to be complicated.
Exactly.
And they have to be fancy, and they have to, you know, use a lot of gizmos or other stuff to make things that are delicious. But you don't, as you well know.
Yeah. Yeah. So. In fact, more and more I'm feeling the simpler the better in so many instances, especially when you're using local ingredients. Mm-hmm. And on that note, we're going to take a little break, but we're not going anywhere. We are staying local tonight on Mouthful.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up for family farms. Selling out, who can blame them? Wine's a cash crop. this land once open and free. Well, they got pictures in the museum of local color that used to be.
You are listening to Mouthful here on KRCB. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sticking with us. We're going to expand the topic now. Not really go in a different direction, just expand it. We have Terry Garrett of Go Local Sonoma. Thanks for making it. I know that
you had to... Thank you for the invitation.
To, like, balance, juggle some things. And Gretchen, editor of the Made Local magazine, right?
Indeed. Good evening.
So let's talk about, what is the umbrella of Go Local? Because I know it's more than one thing, right? The magazine comes under the umbrella.
That's right. That's right. So, well, you know, Sonoma County Go Local is, in a diverse sense, everything from banking to the food system to all aspects, all parts of the economy, trying to localize that as much as we can, right? So 50 years ago, this is not a new concept. We're sort of going back a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, because 50, 75 years ago, it was all just
was
almost
all
by definition.
Right.
Yeah.
It was only maybe 5% of the market share would have not been local, and there would have been a good balance of trade with other regions that you would get your food, and you might ship them some beer and get back some food. So our whole concept is to create a little more local self-reliance in the economy realm, because in the last 50 years we've shifted that. It's almost been a complete inversion. And so our local economic self-reliance, particularly around food, I mean, even in Sonoma County, in terms of vegetables, we only grow about 1% of our consumption of vegetables here, which is astonishing, I think.
When did the Go Local movement, when was it founded, you know, officially here?
The incorporation was in late 2008, officially launched 2009. This was the second iteration. There was an earlier iteration related to Bali in San Francisco, but the second iteration was in 2009. And we've grown from a handful of founding members, and a lot of them within food. Food and banking have been the two, and major retail. But we've grown now to 350 members, very diverse, all different sizes. But we've chosen to focus the last 4 years, a lot more on the food system, for the reasons that we were mentioning, or that you had mentioned during the break, about the food security. And I think a large part of that was driven by the North Coast Regional Food System Network, which was kind of a roll-up of the five counties by the USDA and Glenda's effort there to form a regional food hub here. And the Food System Alliance, of which I've been a part now for almost 4 years, was part of that activity, too, to say, how can we work together? How can the five counties work together to form this regional food hub and source as much as we can here? Because I think each county was probably in a similar spot. I mean, dairy were great, right?
Yeah.
Got plenty of dairy and cheese and all these products, but the fruits and vegetables, not so much. And then, so how do we step that up? How do we step up the game of food processing, that sort of thing?
To be a member of the Go Local movement, what's the entry? What's the requirement?
To be locally owned, at least 50% of the owners must live in Sonoma County.
And does that then also extend to the products they sell? Are they products that are made or manufactured, or is it just locally owned?
Well, it varies depending on the industry sector that you're in.
Okay.
So what we found very refreshing in the North Coast Regional Food System Network and that whole movement is that We were able to redefine that to be this five-county region. Mm-hmm. We're sort of still working through that definition.
So, so we've sort of moved through those geopolitical boundaries.
Well, we've been working for these past couple of years as a project that came out of the North Coast Regional Food System. We Go Local has licensed our trademark to Marin, so the UCCE and the Cooperative Extension and Agricultural Institute of Marin is running their version of Go Local in Marin County, and they've been getting the brand out to all the farmers and the farmers markets, and now they've moved into retail. In Mendocino, we started on the coast up in Gualala up to Point Arena in that region. That started first, and the North Coast Opportunities has been working on the Ukiah area, and I bumped into one of the growers from Mendocino that does the lettuce. He grows the lettuce and the fish bowls or something.
They're actually doing that at Ukiah High.
Is that right?
Yeah, they've got a hydroponic lettuce set up at Ukiah High.
It's pretty fascinating. My granddaughter loved it because it had a fish bowl.
You mean just like, are we talking about like the little desktop aquarium sort of fish bowl thing?
Well, no, this operation's a commercial operation, so I'm sure it's...
they look like fish bowls.
Well, the display did that they had in the store to sort of show the concept, I think. But anyway, so the brand now, the trademark, the circle, the Made Local, Eat Local, Drink Local, Grow Local, we've got about 40-something of those now, are now being distributed in the three counties. Lake is next. We're not really sure about what Napa's going to do. They haven't really come forward yet. But so the idea is to make this a regional brand mark that when you walk into a store, and I can use Oliver's as a perfect
example.
Yes. Right?
Great example.
So Tom Scott and Steve Moss embraced this early on and really worked with us closely to make sure that when you walked into an Oliver's, you could find locally made local products, whether it was the Lagunitas or the Guayaki or the Clover, or whatever those brands were, that you could find it. And so they also modified their product SKUs. So there's now 6,000 product SKUs that relate to made local items, so that we could actually track the sales of that and say, how effective is this marketing? How effective is it to put these brand marks on these products to tell you as a shopper when you walk up to that shelf and you're going to make that decision, am I going to get this one, or this one? And you're picking that made local one. And they'll do, I'm going to guesstimate on this, a little over 30 million this year in sales of those local items.
Well, they do a fabulous job in identifying it so you don't have to hunt for it, number one. They also give it the best shelves, the best real estate, in-store real estate I've seen yet. And they also put it on specials. There have been historically other markets that you reach for the local product and it's really expensive.
Yeah, it has that perception for sure.
And a lot of people who wanted to eat locally back in, say, the 80s and early 90s, they had that hurdle to get over that's just too expensive. And that seems to me one of the things that everyone has to address.
Yeah, you're right.
It can't be more expensive in the end to eat what's grown where you are.
I think also another aspect of that is that because so many of the large agricultural practices are so destructive, that prices are actually coming up to where those high prices in the 80s and 90s might be, because people are now starting to tally in all of the environmental costs and all of the quote-unquote externalities that used to be ignored, and people are slowly becoming aware of that. So
Those
prices are more at parity now.
Right, yeah. Right.
Well, I think it has a lot to do with becoming educated on what real food costs as
well.
And a dozen eggs does cost $8 to grow. It doesn't cost 99 cents to grow. And shucks, at $8, that's what is, it's for the most perfect protein, perfectly packaged ever, you're getting a deal anyway. So, but part of what we need to do and what we are doing is helping to educate consumers about the true cost of good food and local food. And we just need to adjust otherwise then. Yeah,
and I mean, I think it's going to become increasingly important for that. And not so much important, but essential.
Yeah.
I mean, the more we see all these food recalls.
Mm-hmm.
And if people stop to think, you know, the food recalls are national. Mm. You know, they haven't been, you don't hear about E. coli from, you know, Pete's Butcher Shop. Right. You hear about it from, you know, huge corporations that are distributing to right. 40 states or something.
Right. Well, of course, the recent scandal around the slaughterhouse yeah. really showed. When Jon Stewart was showed a Hot Pocket on national television, the meat had come from our local slaughterhouse. That was a really shocking example of how it circulates out yeah. and goes even to Canada and beyond.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so...
I have one question for you guys.
Uh-huh.
So do you think food today... the household basket is more expensive or less expensive than it was 20 years ago as a percentage.
Oh, is a percentage of your income in
uh-huh.
that sense?
And is a real purchasing
Oh, I think
basket.
It's probably quite a bit cheaper.
As a percentage of your income, certainly cheaper.
Mm. Right, but just as a comparative, after adjusting for inflation and everything, there was a study just recently. I was surprised by this because mm-hmm. I look at my own household expenditure and I keep... feeling like the food prices are going up considerably, but really the study showed that it was down by 4 percentage points, from 14% to 10% as a percentage of your household income, and our incomes have not gone up.
And that's right? so low, say, compared mm-hmm. to Western
every other
Europe.
Nation in the
yeah.
world.
Yeah, yeah. No, yeah. so it's quite fascinating, particularly mm-hmm. as we struggle with how to get the local... locally made, locally right. grown, locally processed and produced mm-hmm. foodstuffs. And the price gap, you know, can be as much as 25 to 30% between those items and what the competition is. And so it was a real poignant example of sort of what you guys were talking about, you know, is the big centralized agribusiness that's very huge. And our uphill battle is the local smaller guys trying to do something to scale enough to close a little bit of that price
yeah.
gap.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's a challenge. Tell us about the, is it 10 in 10 program? Is that the right name
of it? The shift, the 10%.
Yeah, 10% well,
you know,
in 10 years.
It's kind of, it's one of those goals that you have to make something that, first of all, is very tangible and very, I can put my hands around it, and then secondly, hopefully realistic enough to be achievable.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got so much distance to go, right? So if we're right. importing 99%, saying, hey, you know, let's just shift 10% of that. So food dollars in Sonoma County, we spend a little over $1.4 billion at the grocery store in Sonoma County, and another $650 million at restaurants.
We need to invert that proposition from my
Is that right? Eat out more.
Yeah.
And so a little over $2 billion, mm-hmm. around $2.1 billion. Right. Dollars. And so if we'd shift 10% of that, so the idea was over the next 10 years, instead of importing $200 million or $210 million, let's produce that here. Let's, mm-hmm. let's see some industry here of growing more, dedicating more land, more... let's get more La Tortilla factories and Amy's Kitchens and Preserve Sonomas and these kinds of businesses and start producing more of that. $200 million will kick off an astounding dividend just because of the economic
yeah.
multiplier.
Right.
It's huge. I mean, this is economic development that doesn't require anybody to come up with any additional capital. It
right.
just says shift your spending.
Right.
Right? I mean, because it does take capital to start up a business.
Exactly.
But what I'm saying is from an economic development standpoint, when mm-hmm. we look at the region, the old way was try to attract a business to open up, to create jobs and that sort of thing. But now we have an opportunity because we have the resource and the assets of land. And, well, we'll see about water pretty soon. But we have great knowledge. We have a good knowledge base, mm-hmm. right, because it's an agricultural community. So we have a good knowledge base. We have great land resources. And if we just did that, we could kick off another 150 to 200 million through the economic multiplier of a dividend that goes right back in towards our local wealth to continue that. So it's 10% over 10 years. Mm-hmm. is the goal.
Now, for somebody who doesn't necessarily understand numbers in that way, it's like, uh-huh. oh, I'm just feeding my family.
Right.
So let's take somebody who shops at a national or regional chain.
Uh-huh.
Walk them through making that change. What is a good way? If they say shift from, I mean, I can say names. If they shift from Whole Foods, uh-huh. Well, they're probably not shopping at Whole Foods. They shift from, say, Safeway
right.
or Raley's to sure. Faircrest Market to right. Oliver's to right. Petaluma Market. That shift is significant, and they don't necessarily have to go all the way from shopping at Safeway and then going to Oliver's and only buying local. If they just make that move to an independent, locally owned market, that's contributing, right?
It is. To get to the most ideal dividend of the shift, the largest economic mm-hmm. multiplier, you would buy locally made, locally produced items at a local retailer, and yes. that's about 35% dividend, right? Mm-hmm. You spend $100, 35 is the dividend that you get over buying from a non-local retailer of a non-local okay. product. Mm-hmm. But you get a good benefit too. You buy the same product that was imported from a local retailer versus a non-local
right.
retailer, you get an advantage.
Uh-huh.
So it's just more of
the more local you go, the bigger that dividend gets.
Dividend, yes. But you only, to do 10%, so let's say you make 52 trips a year. Let's say you go to the grocery store once a week. I mean, I go probably three times, but let's say on average you go once a week. Just 5 weeks out of the year, a little over once a quarter, just say venture out to one of the local stores and see what they have to offer. And I think mm-hmm. if you choose a store like Oliver's, for example, which we were just using in the example, where everything is clearly marked,
yeah.
you at least get to know what the local products are that you mm-hmm. can sample and try. So to do that 1 out of 10 times throughout the year is all that we need to do to get a taste of it. You know, if you don't like it, go back. The one thing that we learned early on was to not be judgmental or harsh about this. It's really mm-hmm. try to entice people to the good quality, the freshness, all of the things that we want them to experience mm-hmm. of a local food market, and that feeling of support. These are folks in your community that are your neighbors, your family, your friends. And, you know, it becomes kind of that bumping in place in a grocery store. And most people do shop in grocery stores for their food purchases. And so, you know, just to get a little taste of that experience mm-hmm. is all we need.
Where does, in this economic picture, where does the farmer's market fit in?
I think the farmer's market, from an economic standpoint, it's still very tiny. Mm-hmm. But I think it's part of more of a rich cultural experience. And I know Gretchen can probably talk to that because of the cover story she wrote in this current issue. But I think it's really to support the local farmers. It's mm-hmm. the place, because that price gap is really difficult for the supermarkets. It's mm-hmm. hard to wholesale and get the margins that you need.
Yeah,
and
plus it seems one of the problems Tom Scott has talked about
uh-huh.
Is so many farmers don't farm on the scale that,
right.
say, he needs for his three stores.
Sure.
And so it seems that the one place where people who are farming on a smaller scale, you have two
right.
options. You have a farm stand, an actual farm stand, or right. you have the farmer's market,
right.
where you can support the farmers that are farming too little to siphon into, you know, the locally owned stores.
Well, yep. there is a kind of almost a third way, too, with
the restaurants.
Exactly.
Oh, sure.
What
yeah.
we have yeah. is a model that a lot of people are calling the RSA, the restaurant-supported agriculture, rather than community-supported
uh-huh.
agriculture.
I like that.
So
mm-hmm.
The woman that I mentioned earlier, Gowan Batiste, she has been the gardener for Noyo Food Forest, who supplies mm-hmm. a good chunk of produce to the Fort Bragg school system. She's just purchased her own place called Fortunate Farms. She's doing some tilling. She's getting her first crops in right now. But, you know, our agreement is I'll buy everything that she can grow.
That's great.
And
cool.
And so,
really,
you know,
great.
And the great thing for me is that she can deliver every day. She's just down the road. This stuff never has to see refrigeration. Not that refrigeration is a bad thing. It's helped us in our modern life. But, you know, the flavor of produce deteriorates instantly as soon as you start refrigerating that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So she can – I mean, you were talking about the corn just, you know, fresh picked. It's not going to be quite – running from the field and into the pot, but it's amazing, you know, that she can bring this stuff just every day. But you know, it's really important that my end of the bargain is I will take whatever you will grow.
Right. Mm-hmm. David Kunich, is that right, from Enresa?
Kinch.
Has, you know, pioneered this in, right. with Love Apple Farms.
Exactly.
And in his new book, he talks about the difficulty of adjusting his menu to, because he was thinking it would be menu-driven and the food would match what he wanted to cook, and he really had to change everything about that. And actually, Dan Barber just wrote this wonderful op-ed in the Sunday
Times,
how farm-to-table has failed us, he feels,
right.
in great part because we're treating our fields like grocery stores.
Exactly.
That's what Bob Knarr did with Chez Panisse back in the 80s and is actually still doing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He grows.
They buy.
He delivers.
They
right.
And whatever whatever he gives them,
it's very
they cook.
Exciting.
How hard
and I
is
love that?
That
RSA.
How hard is that to do, I mean, for you?
Well, you know, I mean, so comparing me to David Kinch is really like apples and oranges because it's very high-end and very haute cuisine, and we are kind of the neighborhood place that overachieves. So it's not really an adequate comparison. So, you know, I've always had to walk that line. I'm glad you're talking about the economic part of it between serving stuff that's delicious, that's good for you, that is good for our local economy, but that also that, you know, the bulk of my customers can afford. And so it's not so much that it's hard. It's more the partnership with Gowan is exciting because you get to use every part of that plant. You know, you get to like Kinch was talking about in his book. You know, you get to see the evolution from shoot to baby vegetable to mature vegetable to what do you do with the seeds after these have bolted? You know, how do we incorporate?
Wow.
All of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What can we do with everything? And so for a place like me, you know, Gowan is never – well, not never. We – like you have your 10 at 10 in my vision for Mendo Bistro in 2020. Part of the vision is that the bulk of our produce and animal protein is going to come from Fortunate Farm. That's my goal.
Wonderful.
Whether we can jointly achieve that remains to be seen, but I think that if you don't set a goal that is slightly ambitious
right.
or maybe just a little bit out of your reach, you're not really setting a goal. You're
That's
just
right.
being complacent. So, you know, it can be difficult, particularly in the restaurant, you know, realm of things, because when you start dealing with things that most restaurant people look at as, say, commodity crops like onions, mm-hmm. carrots, celery, garlic, things like that, you know, they're looking for rock bottom prices, especially
right.
with minimum wage going up and servers now will be making, you know, more money and food prices have gone up across the board. It's going to be tight for restaurants. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons over the past maybe 15 years that small farmers have started growing more of those niche crops or, you know, leading to that cherry picking mm-hmm. situation that Dan Barber was talking about. I think the pendulum is starting to shift back a little bit to saying what Gowan says she wants to start putting out some serious calories from mm-hmm. her land. You know, she wants to feed people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm happy to do my part in helping her do that. But, you know, that's always been the hard part. You know, how do we get the stuff that we need in bulk?
Right.
You know,
where do you get your eggs?
Where do I get my eggs? I actually get my eggs from Katati Food Service. Right down here. My eggs at home I get from a lovely woman who
down
I leave.
The street.
Yeah, she has chickens. Yeah. I leave $5 in a egg carton, and she comes and picks up the egg carton and leaves me a full one.
Yeah, because that's something I always wonder about with restaurants. Restaurants go through a lot of eggs.
Right.
And how do we say, you know, what can farmers do to supply restaurants with eggs that come from happy chickens?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it depends on what you're doing with them. So, you know, certainly fresh eggs are fantastic for pastry. I mean, they're fantastic all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to make, I don't know, you know, mayonnaise or hollandaise or something, it's not necessarily the best use of that mm-hmm. of that particular egg. You know, that's our challenge jointly overall, is mm-hmm. how do we get to a place that is sustainable in every level, so that the people who are working in the restaurants are getting a living wage, the people who are dining in the restaurants are getting good value for what they're paying, and the people who are producing that food and transporting it to us are also enjoying those benefits. I mean, clearly we're not getting that from a 99-cent hamburger, right?
Oh, gosh, no. Certainly not. We're going to take a little musical break here on Mouthful. We'll be right back.
Stuff, or I'll have to have somebody else drive it. I'm rocking in the back pew, getting busy with some homebrew.
It's Mouthful. That's the Beet Farmers. That was for Nicholas. I know you like them. I do too.
Yeah.
Used to see them a lot in San Rosa, actually.
Really?
Yeah, they used to play at the old Studio Cafe.
Okay.
And, I could get psyched. Country Dick would all of a sudden sit down in the middle of the dance floor and start telling stories like it was a campfire. Mm-hmm. It was really great fun. So we've got to talk about the magazine. But before we talk about the magazine, you have something that looks yummy in
front
of us.
Sure, let's eat. So we've got some buttermilk biscuits, some house-cured ham from pork that came from Mendocino Organics, Adam and Paula Gaska. Some pickled red onions and a little bit of stout mustard made with Barney Flats oatmeal stout from the Anderson Valley Brewing Company.
Nice.
So
cool.
Lovely.
Dig in and eat. And
do we have a knife to cut things in
I
half?
I didn't bring a knife, but we might have one somewhere here in the studio.
Mike is going to run
Perfect.
And get a knife.
All right.
And so while he's getting the knife, tell us about when the magazine started up and how it's – I know it's under the umbrella of Go Local, so explain that part. Yeah.
Why don't I give a segue and then you take it from there. Mm-hmm. So the Sonoma County Food System Alliance, which was formed in 2009, and that's the Ag Innovations in the county, created this. And it's a stakeholder group that's here to really promote the Food Action Plan, which came about after the assessment and the forum and all of this. And it was really, how do we create a local food system here that can help sustain us? So from that, and this is a kind of, this is what it looks like. It's just, you know, you can't see it on the radio, but it's, you know, it's a what you would expect as a policy document.
Right.
Right? It's complete with just a lot of great stuff, very thorough, very comprehensive. The challenge is, how do you get the general population aware of these things and get them to actually be aware to the point that they can take action with these things. And so I have a background in publishing. I was a newspaper magazine publisher for 30 years all across the country, mostly in Phoenix and Los Angeles and San Francisco and Florida. But the point being, it was kind of in my wheelhouse to say, you know what, let's do a magazine. Let's do one that is purely dedicated to this, because it's really hard for traditional publishers these days to just only do that. I mean, you got to do a lot of different things these days. But because of the nature of our organization and what we're focused on, it made it easier and better for us to do that. And I was just totally knocked out by all the folks in the Food System Alliance, just all the great people who had put this together, and felt like we needed to tell these stories. And so one fine day, called Gretchen and said, "Hey, Gretchen, what do you think?
Let's do this thing." As you know, I'm the former editor of The Bohemian. Mm-hmm. And the Made to Local magazine is really exists to illustrate the stories behind the Food Action Plan. The Food Action Plan is a marvelous civic document, earnest and full of good ideas, but kind of a dry read. So our idea is to really begin to bring the stories to life. And as the editor of The Bohemian, I was there for 8 years as editor, and I really felt like I knew Sonoma County. And when I began to work on Made Local magazine, I realized that there was a whole section of people I knew nothing about. And it's been absolutely fabulous to connect with and help to illuminate and tell the stories of people in the ag sector, the technologists, the artisans, and the young farmers. Mm-hmm. Terry and I spent a lot of time patting ourselves on the back, because we really feel that we're not ahead of the curve, we're not behind the curve, we are exactly on the curve. It's a very exciting time to be outstanding in a field. There are so many young people coming into it. I think the interest in local foods, in artisan foods, in local resiliency, in having our own grain growing here, for example, so that we can make our own flour, so that if you did have to try to live, as you were mentioning earlier, solely on items based within 150-mile radius, you actually could do that. It's just an exciting time. So we're having a lot of fun going out, finding these stories, and reflecting the community back to itself in a completely different way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're bi-weekly, bi-monthly. We have 12,000 issues every time we go out the door. You can find us at local independent markets. That's... And Copperfields carries us, and so does Friedman's. But generally, you'll find us at the markets. We're preparing our new issue to come out at the end of June, and so that'll be our fourth. Mm-hmm. So it's really just been a kick.
Now, and can you subscribe?
No.
Okay.
We don't have that, and we ask you to pick it up as you leave the market, generally.
Okay, so it's a free publication.
It's a free publication. Mm-hmm. Terry and I both come from the alternative press, so we're really... Mm-hmm. Right. We're really at ease with that model. Mm-hmm. We really understand the firewall between advertising and editorial, and one supports the other, but they don't mix. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's great. And, you know, it's an interesting thing to put out a print magazine in the 21st century.
I know.
But it really makes the most sense in terms of our distribution base and being able to exactly target the people that we want to be reading it to actually have it in the grocery stores. And a lot of people are taking it to the farmers markets as well, because we've been focusing and emphasizing that. And that whole idea of knowing your farmer, actually meeting the person or representative of the farm, seeing the produce there, beginning to get a little bit more involved with your food. We're only a few generations away from what you were saying 50 years ago, you know, everything was local. It's not that long ago. And a lot of the young people that I've talked to are coming into this in great part because large corporations have co-opted it. And they're frightened at the idea, for example, that one corporation might own everything about a pig, from its genome to the way it's packaged in the market and everything in between. Is that a healthy, sustainable way to live? No. Is that what you want for your kids if you're a thinking young person? No. So they're really beginning to look for ways. And land, of course, is a premium. They're renting, they're leasing, they're borrowing. They're doing everything they can to try to grow their own, using social media as well to connect with each other. We did Crop Mobster on our first issue, which is a terrific platform out of Bloomfield Farms that connects.
We had Nick on. We had Nick on from I think his first week. I think he announced Crop Mobster here on Mouthful.
Cool. That's great. So, he was going to the UN next week.
That's awesome.
I mean, he's really taken off.
Yeah, it was one of those things. It was the perfect idea at the perfect time with the perfect energy. Mm-hmm. I think he talked about it. Do you remember? It was like 3 days before it launched. They had just designed the website. He told us the story of how it's just him and this guy, and then it just took off. Do you know about it?
I do.
It's amazing.
It is. And, you know, I think another exciting aspect of this is that these kind of ideas have been circulating generationally ever since the Industrial Revolution in, mm-hmm. you know, particularly in England with the arts and crafts movement mm-hmm. and this kind of, mm-hmm. you know, back to uh-huh. handmade and hand-done stuff. And that never goes away. And right. it seems the further in one direction tech goes, then the further the kind of handmade, authentic experience has to go. But what's exciting now is that, like you said, by using social media or other ways, people can communicate in right. the most amazing ways, yeah, right. you know, really to get connect. Their products
yeah, the
to market. And to connect and to find that, but at the same time recognizing that there is something false, you know, to a degree in the construct, and mm-hmm. that you have to go back to this handmade,
absolutely.
Hand-grown, hey, I got this from you down the street mm-hmm. kind of thing.
And we have to do something so that if there's no electricity, we can still access it, you know? Right. So that, I mean, that's one of the reasons right. I love print, other than exactly. that I love the physicality of print. I don't always want to have electricity involved in sourcing information.
And not only
or
that,
connecting
but
with people.
It's going to disappear.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we have rows of CDs. We've both been around long enough to see recorded music go through a number of different mm-hmm. formats that just really don't last. The printed page, you know, that we can find scrolls from Egypt from yeah. thousands of years ago. You know, that doesn't go away
yeah.
in the same way that electrons sort of disappear.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we think of all that would disappear if suddenly the World Wide Web were to vanish for whatever reasons.
Which it sounds like it is vanishing to some degree.
Oh, gosh, there's a scary topic for another time. But, okay, so back to the magazine. The magazine comes out every other month.
Mm-hmm.
Free grocery stores as you're walking out, some farmers markets. Do you guys have a storefront? Is there an office people can stop by?
we're actually out in the community
okay.
every day.
Oh, okay.
Kind of doing stuff.
So that's right. All your members. So I would think different members that are, say, banks. Well, banks that are members have a stack of magazines, maybe?
The banks one. I mean, we really tried to concentrate this. I mean, I swore I would never do another print publication.
And here you are.
I sold my newspaper in 1999 when I saw the writing on the wall and said I'd never do another one. But here I am. And it was really because it was so specialized. It is only this. It is
right.
only about food.
Oh, it's only about food.
Okay. It's only about food.
Okay, gotcha.
It is only distributed, I mean, ordinarily for 12,000 copies, you'd have to be in, you know, around 500 locations. Mm-hmm. I mean, most publications, that's pretty much the ratio.
Yep.
We only go in 20 locations. So we move 12,000 copies mm-hmm. in 20 locations.
When did it launch?
We launched in November of last year.
Okay. Sometimes Sonoma Magazine launched or relaunched.
Well, uh-huh. when it relaunched,
yeah,
sure.
relaunched.
Right,
yeah.
right.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's a different, completely different kind of a book than what we're doing.
Oh, no, it's just interesting that it was the same time.
Yeah. It's,
November.
It's,
sure,
it's sort
just
of
before the holidays.
I mean, just as a publishing, sort of inside publishing aside, you know, it's the magazines, I think, at least if they're specialized types of magazines, I think there's still a large preference for those.
I think so too.
You know, I mean, I see, and it's not just a ageism type thing. I talk to a lot of younger folks who actually like that. I think it has shifted. I mean, there's no doubt about that in terms of preference.
But it's just a different slice of the pie. Nobody
it
gets
is.
The
exactly.
whole pie.
Right.
It's
exactly.
just a slightly
shifted. That's right.
And you know what? We
it's
are just about out of time.
Okay.
So we got to wrap it up. So I'm going to go back to Nick. And Nick, tell people, what's your website? GoMendo?
MendoBistro.com.
MendoBistro.com.
Right. We're open 7 nights a week, year-round, except for Thanksgiving and Christmas. The bar is open every day, lunch every day, Monday through Saturday, brunch on Sundays. We're in Fort Bragg, corner of Main and Redwood, in the company store. Please come see us.
Great. Gretchen, you're the editor. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
They're welcome to email me, gretchen@madelocal.coop, and I'd glad to.
Dot co-op?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know about .coop.
Yeah, madelocal.coop.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Gretchen@madelocal.coop. And if somebody wants to reach you?
Terry@madelocal.coop.
There you go. Thank you both so much. I know that you accepted the invitation at the last minute. I really appreciate it. And I really appreciate you tuning in. I'll be back here next week with another yummy episode of Mouthful, the Wayne Kendry's Most Delicious Hour here on KRCB. Have a great week and eat something local.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.
Listen to what the preacher says.
To the Lord, praises be.